everybody. Get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis on this chilly November weekend. We have a great show today, although I'm a little unhappy because all of our guests are accomplished, brilliant entrepreneurs, and, you know.
And you're not.
They rule the food scene, and I'm just, you know, I'm just here for the free food.
But there is none today.
I see a plate
actually, there's
there.
A little bit. Sorry, I forgot.
Hey, Matt. All right, baby.
Sorry.
All right. Well, we'll give Matt a special thing.
Okay.
Let me just tell you who's going to be on the show today. Of course, Mitch Berliner from Central Farm Markets is going to talk Thanksgiving and let us know what they've got there. Our drink segment is going to be great because RAMW, the Restaurant Association's Cocktail Week, starts 11/29, and we're going to
be... Because after Thanksgiving, what does everybody need but a drink?
Well, are you kidding? What do you think I'll be doing on Thanksgiving?
I don't know.
With all those nieces and nephews running around,
okay.
I'll be...
I can think of worse things.
All
anyway,
right.
Tell
so
us
joining
who's
us
be
is
here.
Shane Mason, our buddy from Crazy Aunt Helen's, down on Barracks Row, and Matt Cockerell, who's the executive chef and head of culinary operations for Hakan İlhan at Brasserie Liberté and Ottoman Taverna and everywhere else. So,
yeah, but Matthew is at Brasserie Liberté.
I know he is. He's the executive chef there.
Can we get on with the introductions,
I know better than you.
Please?
Sam Bernstein is the founder and CEO at Table 22. It's a great concept. They help independent restaurants across the country build and launch and really expand and scale up for subscription offerings, things like wine clubs, private cocktail and cooking classes, and more. Sam will be joining us.
Talk about right place, right time.
And I say, why eat Soylent Green when there's Bowery Farming? Somebody, are you guys old enough to have seen that movie? No, forget it.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Katie Sewell is the chief commercial officer at Bowery Farming. They build indoor farms, smart farms,
vertical
near cities.
Farms.
They're vertical farms, and so they grow fresher, pesticide-free, protected produce. You're going to hear all about it, but it is really, it's not even 21st, it's 22nd
it's
century
so cool.
farming.
I can't
it's
wait
very
to talk
cool.
To her. Mm-hmm.
And Greg Reynolds is the taproom manager, and Sten Sellier, is it Sellier? Am I saying it right? Good. Sellier is founder and president of Beltway Brewing. They're a local brewing company here in the D.C. area. We're going to be tasting and talking. Brewskis. I can't
okay,
wait.
But first, hey, Mitch. So, listen, the last couple of weeks we have been talking about Thanksgiving. This is our last show before Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
So let's talk about, like, what the deadlines are and how people can get everything that they need from their local Central Farm Market.
Well, thank you. We will be open, of course, next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to next weekend, we also have our 10th annual special Thanksgiving Day market at Pike and Rose, right next to Bark Social, from 10 to 2. So you can pick up your turkeys, your pies, your cakes, but please do order them. And you can go to centralfarmmarkets.com.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at our different vendors. We're going to have lots of great, we're going to have a full house, but you must get the pie and turkey orders in. Some of the people are selling out now. So I tell everybody, and then also every year, part of our tradition is after the special Thanksgiving Day market, which is Tuesday, November 23rd, 10 to 2, the following Saturday and Sunday, we give off to our vendors and farmers.
I think that's fair. So it's very important for everybody to remember that it's after Thanksgiving, it's a... The weekend is shot for the market.
I would make them work, personally.
No, it's important. Everybody needs a break, especially this year because with all the disruptions and everything, I'm sure the farmers are really busy and the makers, right?
Oh, yeah. Everybody's been very busy. I mean, we've had record crowds, you know, simply because people aren't traveling. People have, you know, learned to stay home more.
I really think it's because they listen to Foodie and the Beast and then they come to your markets.
Well, there's no question about that.
You're fired, Mitch. Sorry.
And I also want to, you know, give a warning. You know, Dave, when you talk about the, you know, drinking the nephews and nieces and all, Please don't be giving them cocktails. That's wrong for 10-year-olds. Okay?
Yes, it is wrong for 10-year-olds. All right, Mitch, tell everybody, please. We know you have the special market. Let's know where we can find you online because you can place your orders and everybody should be ordering now. This is not the time. There's no room for procrastinators with Thanksgiving this year. So where can they place their orders?
Go to Central Farm Markets, that's plural, centralfarmmarkets.com. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Go look at our different folks. We've got Liberty. We got Meat Crafters who's doing fully smoked turkeys this year, mm-hmm. which is really a treat. So you don't have to bother.
You know, I've smoked a turkey. Garage.
Okay, and thanks so much, Mitch. Have a really wonderful Thanksgiving. I got to cut you off.
Go smoke a turkey.
Bye-bye. Yes, go smoke a turkey. Bye. Best to you and Deb. Okay.
All right, so... Wait a minute. You know, Prohibition was a drag. Can we agree, even though none of us, including me, was here for that?
Mm-hmm.
But it was, and it inhibited a lot of fun. So the Restaurant Association.
I think a lot of people had fun during Prohibition anyway. Everybody some was did. Sneaking
some,
around.
Some who weren't doing Reefer Madness mm-hmm. were doing it. But Restaurant Association of Metropolitan Washington schedules every year a cocktail week around the time of the anniversary for the repeal of Prohibition. And on November 29th. It starts,
mm-hmm.
and we've got Matt Cockerell in from Brasserie
How
Liberté.
How about if we explain what's happening
well, I'm
with
just
DC
saying,
Cocktail Week so people understand
Matt
what
step,
the deal is?
I want Matt to step to the mic, okay. and you tell him about the week, and then he'll tell us
okay,
what
well,
he's doing.
Okay, well, so the thing is that it's not just cocktails. That's what I think is so interesting about DC Cocktail Week. While restaurants all across the city are participating, they also like serve a little bite with it, which is why we have a chef in studio with us. Who is going to pour a cocktail, but also tell us about the bite. So, hi, how are you?
Good. Pleasure to be here.
It's so nice to have you here. So tell us a little bit about your, before we get into Cocktail Week, tell us a little bit about your menu and program at Brasserie Liberté and how it works in general with your cocktail program.
Absolutely. So we are a classic French bistro. A lot of our food trends that way. A couple more modern dishes, but, you know, a lot of them is, you know, very classic aspect, beef bourguignon, pâté, escargot, things of that nature. In our cocktail program follows that exact same kind of idea. Very classic cocktails, things that are relatable, things that people remember and enjoy, from things like French 75, what we're doing today, to Manhattan, Old Fashioned, Sazerac, things of that nature. And we can do more modern cocktails as well, too, like Last Word, things of that. But, you know, we like to keep it very classic Brasserie bistro style, you know, very approachable.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense given what you're doing, right? And the kind of feel of the restaurant. I'm sure your bar can handle, you know, an out there kind of cocktail.
Absolutely.
But you know, more and more restaurants these days do have a cocktail menu, right? They don't just leave it up to the diner to be like, oh, I'll have whatever. And so were you a part of crafting that?
No, I wasn't. When we first opened, we did have a beverage manager who crafted that cocktail list, like I said, is very classic. And to your point, it is important to have that menu to help guide the guests from these classic cocktails, sparkling wine cocktails,
mm-hmm.
Things of that nature as well. So it's not somebody, guest just comes in and is like, I don't know what I want. You can kind of guide them and push them towards the direction
Matt,
that will be best suited.
Point of order. When somebody asks you that question, nobody will know the real answer. You say, yes, I crafted the cocktail menu. And who the hell's going to know?
I got to give credit where credit's due.
Felicia's like, I'm here.
Take the credit.
Okay. So, all right. So you're doing what are you doing for Cocktail Week?
So we're doing a French 75.
Okay. French 75. What's in a French 75?
So it's a classic cocktail and they base it on what they had around the time. So it's gin. Lemon juice, simple syrup, and sparkling wine.
Wow. Okay, so it is a French cocktail.
Yes.
So they use champagne, but you guys are using sparkling wine.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just calling it like I see it. And then what are you going to use to pair with it?
Our beet carpaccio.
Oh, okay. So it's so funny because I see this beautiful plate and your beet carpaccio. When I think
but
of
I
the...
I see it over there.
Yeah. So. Okay, relax. When I think of DC Cocktail Week, I think of like a cocktail and like a bite.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a plate.
Yeah, well, so my food is always, I believe in being generous and good portion sizes, but also, especially with a cocktail, you know, it's not just a sip or two. You know, it's an experience with the cocktail, so
you're
it's important
it.
To experience that with the plate as well, too.
I love it. Okay, great. While you put that cocktail together, we're going to go to our first guest, and we'll be back to you later in the show.
Sam Bernstein. Hi, Sam.
Sam.
How are you?
Hi, Nikki. Hi, David.
Just again, so everybody remembers, Sam is the founder and CEO at Table 22, and they work with independent restaurants across the country to help them really establish and stand up their businesses and grow subscription offerings, in particular like wine clubs or private cooking classes, that sort of thing. So, Sam, let's get a little about your background, because that's not something that just anybody would come up with.
Sure. Yeah. So thanks so much for having me. Table 22 is the second software company that I had started and really has a unique origin story. You know, the prior company had been badly affected by the pandemic in the same way that so many restaurants had. And fortunately, instead of, you know, throwing in the towel, we actually pivoted the business model from something that was focused on real estate online into something that was about helping restaurants kind of build the next generation of tools that they were going to use to connect with guests and build sustainable businesses. And so we launched our first restaurant in May of 2020, kind of right in the heart of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Today we work with hundreds of restaurants across more than 50 US cities, which is really exciting. And we're seeing some really amazing outcomes on everything from, you know, meal and cooking kits to wine clubs to baked goods boxes and butcher boxes, and really just trying to work with the best of, you know, any given community's kind of food and beverage creators and operators and help them, you know, grow their business with a predictable, you know, incremental, stable revenue stream, and then, you know, get closer to their community by having that kind of monthly touch point with the folks that are really excited about what they create and their brand, and, you know, really build out that segment of kind of loyalists and regulars. And so,
well, let's back up a little bit because, you know, for the layperson, right?
Sure.
You know, the pandemic happened and restaurants, you know, had a hustle and bustle to figure out how they were going to create revenue streams other than, you know, serving people in the restaurants, which they could no
sure.
longer do. And I think there's this real misperception out there that, you know, the restaurants were just able to, like, come up with kits and come up with this stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So since you had this company and you were able sure. to provide this service, what were you providing to the restaurants? Do you know what I mean? Because not everybody knows how to do this. So what did
yeah.
you come with the concepts to the restaurants?
Sure.
You
sure.
know what I mean? Like how
yeah.
did that part work?
You know, one of the questions restaurants sometimes ask when we're kind of in a conversation about working with them is, you know, why shouldn't I try to do this on my own and skimp on the fees?
I mean,
good luck.
And,
you know, one of the components of that is obviously we've built out a big kind of set of software tools that help them run it, and it's really turnkey. Another component of that is we operate logistics in 10 US cities, but, you know, that's a newer thing. What you're really asking about is like helping them understand what to do. And I think over time, as we've had more partners and more data points, and we've seen successes and failures across different kinds of offerings and price points, what we've been able to really help our restaurants benefit from is learnings and data, mm-hmm. and come to the table and say, you know, if you're this kind of restaurant with this kind of audience, with this kind of menu and this kind of price point, you know, here are really our recommendations for the best practices, and here's how to structure the offerings, and here's how to price them. And really, I think that's helping the restaurants that work with us go out successfully on day one and avoid mistakes that they might otherwise make and not be on an island in that particular regard.
How did you get that smart? Because your previous
business, we have to take
a break.
Sure.
So you can't tell us why you're so smart. but when we come back, we'll dig in a little deeper. This is David and Nikki Nellis. It's Foodie and the Beast. How did those kits come together during the pandemic? We'll find out more. Just a sec.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to Sam Bernstein of Table 22. Sam, your previous business was LoftSmart, which I assume was helping people, you know, in the rental, you know, the apartment rental biz or purchase
yes.
biz. But so how did you, where did your knowledge about the restaurant industry come from that you could do this? Did you bring in partners? How did it work?
A couple of things. One is, you know, I start from the premise of just being a total obsessive about food and restaurants. And, you know, the name Table 22 actually comes from the specific table that I used to sit at my favorite restaurant in New York City, Pasquale Jones. And I really became a regular there. And it's there that I kind of experienced how magical it could be to feel connected to a particular chef and their team and, you know, the wine director and all of the kind of amazing experiences.
We were told your favorite restaurant was IHOP, but apparently bad
information. So what we try to create on Table 22 is the ability for every subscriber to every restaurant to kind of have that magical connection. So I start from that premise of like, what's the desired consumer experience? That's the first component, but certainly I have some blind spots. And so what we've tried to do is work with a really strong team and have really great investors. And so as an example, our COO is an amazing woman named Margarita Cappy. She was the head of restaurant operations at Uber Eats. And so she brings a huge amount of knowledge about how to work with restaurants and how to build software for restaurants. Now, I think we're building, you know, a slightly more restaurant friendly model, but still the kind of knowledge is there. And so try to work with folks like that. And then the last thing I'll say is just that on the kind of investor side, we've been fortunate to work with folks like some of the founders of Sweetgreen, David Barber from Blue Hill Stone Barns, and really try to bring that knowledge to the company through the folks that are involved.
Well, we know
in
the
sweet
green guys. They were
ours. But the different thing is that not everybody is food tech savvy, right? Like, I mean, food tech is the future, and it's, you know, all over restaurants, but not every chef or restaurateur is super savvy on that component.
Sure.
You know, so there is a catch up on some of that.
Catch up.
Yeah,
let's talk about some of the partners that you're working with here in DC.
Sure. So we've been really fortunate to have a kind of deep bench of amazing partners in DC, many of whom are seeing amazing success on the platform. Mm-hmm. The most notable is probably Rose's Luxury. Mm-hmm. And we've had an amazing time working with Rose's. They have a dinner kit subscription on Table 22 for every month, you know, delivered within 30 miles of Rose's, including into Maryland and Virginia. They're bringing these incredible kind of cook and finish at home kits into the homes of subscribers, and then they have a wine club as well. That's been an amazingly successful model.
I just want to clarify for our listeners, are these things that the consumer orders off of your platform, or is this things that they can order off of the restaurant's platform?
Yeah, so Roses is leveraging our platform, and the consumer is coming to table22.com/Roses Luxury.
Okay.
And they're ordering through our site, and then we're providing all of the kind of order management and fulfillment tools to Roses to turn those kits around.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the sell, because you've got restaurants. First of all, do you pick your targets, and that's where, and you know, whoever does the selling calls and says, "Hi, I'm blank from Table 22," or are you?
You know, it's a mixed bag, and we've certainly got a list of restaurants that we'd be really excited to work with. And you know, I should say it's not just restaurants; it's bakeries and breweries and cocktail bars and really just great food and bev businesses broadly. Mm-hmm. But yes, we've got a target list. There are a bunch of folks that we think would do really well based on our learnings. We're reaching out to them. We also try to work with local experts in local markets. And so, you know, whether it's a food PR firm or someone that's just kind of really connected in a particular city, try to kind of harvest some knowledge about who are the real players in town, and then, you know, what are the best ways to work with them and get in touch with them. And then I should also say as a third thing that, you know, referrals are just a huge part of our business. And so 35% of our, you know, new partners come from referrals made by existing partners. And that's just really important.
Well, and I really do think that while this was unnecessary during the pandemic, what a lot of people realized is that it's another revenue stream that they can incorporate going forward. Like, they don't have to let it go, provided they have the space and the capabilities, staffing, et cetera, to handle it.
Yeah, absolutely right. And, you know, we were obviously it was a big wait and see moment. Like, would this be a durable model for restaurants? And, you know, we've been really excited. 95% of our partners have stayed on through the reopenings and have continued to fulfill subscriptions and grow their programs. And we're seeing a lot of demand on the consumer side as well.
Well, that's really the key, because if the consumer hadn't wanted it, you'd be DOA. But what happened with the pandemic is it sort of opened up a new world for everybody. And we're like, hey man, this is convenient and it's easy
and it's fun.
The food shows up and it's still good. And why the hell would I want to go out when I can stay in and have somebody drop it at the door?
Absolutely right. And cooking with ingredients curated by your favorite chefs is you know, a really awesome experience.
Or wines or whatever. Yeah. Absolutely.
Totally.
All right.
Totally
so listen, I really appreciate your time this morning. Tell everybody where they can find you online and on Instagram.
Yeah, we're just table22.com. Mm-hmm. And then our Instagram is @OurTable22.
Excellent.
And so
great.
Check us out.
Okay. Thanks so much. Thanks for joining us this morning. Okay. We're back to DC Cocktail Week. We will discuss the drink that was poured for us because it's delicious.
Yeah, it is.
I would never think of this cocktail as like a morning cocktail, but it's a total morning cocktail. It's really yummy.
That's why, because you drink it in the morning, you don't wake up till the next morning. Do you, Matt?
Anyway.
Subtle but true.
Right. Shane is joining us from Crazy Aunt Helen's.
Yay.
He came on right when the
May I just say, you're back on the show for the second time. So when
he's been here before that.
Well,
he
I know, but when I said come back, Shane,
yes,
you did.
You actually did invite me back.
Right.
And not only that, I think he's excited. Every time he sees you, he says, come back.
I do. He does, but that's really all right.
Stupid.
It's okay.
I will keep coming
You're
back.
You're stupid. I know you are, but what am I?
It's stupid. I'm just saying.
All right.
So, listen, we're so thrilled that you're here. Crazy Ann Helens is an amazing place up on Capitol Hill.
It's a lot of fun.
And you're doing so many great things.
Thank you.
Tell us about your cocktail program.
Yeah, sure. So when we were opening, I reached out to Jojo Valenzuela.
Mm-hmm, who we love.
I love him so much.
Mm-hmm.
The only two things that I asked for were for him to use inspiration from Grandma's candy bowl. You know, the hard candies you get when you go into Grandma's house.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a drug deal. I went over to his
My
spot
grandma passed away.
And dropped
Thanks
off.
A lot, Shane.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You need a drink.
You should be
140.
You're also, I know. I was like, how old are you?
Let's
Shut
get
up.
Him a drink. And the other thing was I wanted to only really feature local spirits.
Mm-hmm.
So all
Which
of our,
is actually pretty easy to do these days.
So easy. Amazing quality.
I mean, we have a local brewery in here. Hello.
Exactly. I know. I'm gonna chat with this man. So those are the only two things I asked for, and he really delivered.
So when it comes to Cocktail Week,
yes.
Did he come up with a specific cocktail and pairing for this, or did he just take something from the menu already?
No, I went ahead and chose something from the menu since we've only opened in July.
Right.
And I felt like it's all new.
Right.
So we wanted to feature Filibuster. So we put on our Rudy Old Fashioned.
Wait, I'm so confused.
Yeah.
So it's called the Rudy Old Fashioned.
It's called the Rudy Old Fashioned.
Uh-huh, because it's just going to get you wasted.
Well, it's our take on an old fashioned.
Uh-huh.
And JoJo got inspiration from the little root beer candies.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's made with Filibuster bourbon, cane potato, sweet potato syrup.
Sure.
And some bitters.
Okay. And then what are you pairing with it?
We're going to do a catfish bites.
Ooh, yum.
With house made coleslaw.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Sounds good.
You know, we're American comfort food, so we want to give
you
a hug and. We will be sure to take your hand and escort you to your Uber
so
if you need it.
So is Crazy Aunt Helen out there now with a line in the canal looking for the catfish?
My Aunt Helen?
Yeah.
Oh, no, she's gone to glory, as my family would say.
She's fishing for catfish in
she
heaven?
She is above, and I've invited her in the space. Every once in a while, the lights twinkle, and I think,
Shane.
Helen is here.
Right, like that. All right,
well, cool. Go pour that drink,
sure.
And when you come back, we'll talk more about what's happening for you and the rest of it.
All right.
Okay.
Sounds good.
So at the top of the show, I mentioned the brilliant entrepreneurs we were going to have on today, and not the least among them is Katie Sewell. She's the chief commercial officer at Bowery Farming, which is really a 22nd century take on farming the purest and the bestest and the most delicious in an urban environment. Is that a good way of putting it, Katie? Driven by an operating system that is from Star Wars.
Okay.
But I do want to say, wait.
Just like Katie talk instead
but wait,
of
no,
talking.
No, I got to give Katie her props because some people come up with this stuff and, you know, they build it up. She's a Starbucks senior leadership veteran. She has a background in 21st and 22nd century delivery of foodstuffs to folks. So she got a leg up on the rest of the world that wanted to come up with a great new way of farming. So, Katie, give us a little bit on your background because that's a pretty impressive credential.
Absolutely. It's great to be here, David and Nikki, and it's tough to follow cocktails, but super excited to be here. So as you mentioned, prior to joining Bowery, I was at Starbucks for almost 14 years in a variety of leadership roles in product, marketing, operations, and brand. And actually, I came to Bowery about 2.5 years ago, and my founder, Irving Fain, who is the real thought leader behind the idea and concept of Bowery, was someone who I was immediately drawn to for kind of the vision and audacity he had to reimagine what farming could look like. You know, as you think about the food system today, it sits at the intersection of some of the most important challenges and opportunities we have to deal with, whether that's climate change, food safety, equity, access.
Right.
And we are looking to do things differently at Bowery.
Well, Well, so let's talk about that. I mean, that's why this is such a keen interest to me. I mean, we bring lots of people on the show to talk about, you know, disruption in the food space and what that's going to look like going forward. There is so much incredible food out there, but there is an entire segment of our country that includes children and seniors that do not have access to fresh, nutritious food. And you know, distribution is a huge part of that problem. But part of it is the growing issue and how it's grown and what's happening there. So tell us about what Bowerwee is doing and how you're doing it.
Absolutely. So at Bowerwee, we are essentially building smart indoor vertical farms close to the communities we serve. Mm-hmm. We are taking non-arable land. So typically we will take an old warehouse that maybe has historically played a vital role in the community with manufacturing, but is sitting idle today. Mm-hmm. We have a farm just outside of Baltimore in Nottingham, Maryland, where we took an old warehouse and repurposed it into these indoor vertical farms. We are completely indoors. We are controlling the entirety of the growing process. And just to visualize what that looks like, we are stacking all of our crops from floor to ceiling. We're using LED lighting that mimics the spectrum of the sun. And then we have our Bowerwee operating system, which you mentioned earlier on, that is controlling every single aspect of the growing process of the plants and managing all of the workflow in the farm. So it's this comprehensive, integrated operating system that includes sensors, vision systems, robotics, automation, and then we capture that data and learn what the plants need to unlock the yield, quality, and flavor profile that we're looking for, whether that's more LED lighting for a longer period of time, more intensity, the water nutrient level, or the airflow that's going through the farm. It's quite extraordinary in terms of how we're leveraging technology to grow these amazing crops indoors 365 days a year.
So it's all hydroponic?
It's hydroponic.
Okay.
Yep.
And then when we talk about the crops, what crops are we specifically talking about at this moment? Because I assume there's lots of room in there for growth.
Absolutely. So right now, in terms of commercial products available, we have about 13 different SKUs, and it's a variety of lettuces and herbs. Mm-hmm. We also have an R&D facility in Kearney, New Jersey, along with our other commercial farm that serves the tri-state area. And there we are driving innovation to get beyond leafy greens. So in our R&D facility, you would see strawberries growing, you would see other vine crops, soft fruits. So our vision really is to help transform a meaningful portion of the produce category. But right now in the marketplace, it's lettuces and herbs.
All right. You need to take a break or no? Are we good?
We don't need to take a break.
All right, good. Because the first question that occurs to me, because this is so genius, what about the carbon footprint? Are we are we doing good things with the vegetables, but eating up a lot of energy and all of that? And can I get a tan from your lights? That's the other question I have.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And let me talk about a couple things in terms of the growing system where we think we're improving things from a sustainability standpoint. Our goal really is to drive access, big addressable markets to fresh, safe produce. I think we have real advantages in terms of land use and water. As I mentioned, we convert non-arable land into these highly productive farms, but we're also more productive on that in that farm. So we grow about 100 times more produce on the same square foot of land than what you might traditionally get out of farming.
Right.
We are growing 365 days a year, so we're seasonally agnostic. And because we're growing up and not out, we are leveraging every square foot of land for production and processing. We are also using less water. If just kind of for a point of reference, agriculture consumes about 70% of the world's freshwater supply. Mm. So we are really focused on minimizing the amount of water that we use. And we're about 90%, we use about 90% less water than traditional agriculture to grow the same amount of crops.
That's California's whole problem.
So Katie, we do have to take a quick break. Okay. So just give us a sec. This is fascinating. And I think a lot of people want to know how they can either be a part of it or support it or how it grows. Yeah. So give us a sec. This is David and Nikki Nellis. It's Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a minute.
Okay, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And Katie, I want to get back to the conversation about I just heard a report on CNN this morning that how, you know, rampant inflation and all that is not only, you know, there are 40 million people that are hungry in this country anyways, and the spike in pricing on foodstuffs and all of that is affecting a lot more people and creating more food insecurity. You're partnered, well, you have customers at 850 grocery stores in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic regions alone. Are they involved in any kind of program to provide, you know, to help folks who can't afford to go to Whole Foods or can't afford even to go to Giant or Safeway to get fresh, good, wholesome food?
David, the inflationary pressures that you referenced and talked about are very real. I think a couple of advantages that we have is we are local and regionally grown, and we are vertically integrated. So our system is very close to the point of consumption, and it is simplified, right? Because we're vertically owned, we take control of the plant from seed all the way through to distribution. So it's very simplified and efficient in terms of what we're doing. In terms of what's going on at the macro level with regard to access to food, it's something very real and something that we're deeply committed to. I think one of the things that we are very focused on is working with a breadth of retailers, right? When you talk about the 850 doors we're in, that's not just Whole Foods and specialty. We're very proud to be there, but it also includes a much wider net of retailers like the Albertsons, like the Weiss, like the Walmart. So opening up lots of distribution points to our product to keep driving access is critically important to the work we're doing.
Well, Katie, a couple let me of ask you, if I could just ask a question. So I guess my question is about, so you have these products and they're, you know, you're selling them in stores and stuff like that, but what's the sort of response from the farmers? What's the response from those who are on the ground farming? Big ag is its own issue. And then you have the little, you know, like our farmers markets, like you heard Mitch earlier in the show. So how does this get integrated? Like big ag does need a change, obviously, but how do we work with the little local farmers as well? How does that happen? And how do you integrate all that?
Absolutely. I think we believe there's huge opportunity for partnership. It's going to take a lot of different types of innovation to continue to strengthen and fortify our local regional food system. And I think the role that Bowery and controlled environment agriculture in general can play is to really grow food at scale in an efficient and cost-effective way. And I think then there is opportunity absolutely for the local growers and regenerative growers to step in and play that role on probably a smaller scale, but equally important scale. So I see Bowery's contribution to the local regional food system around scale and access.
Okay, I have one more question, and then my husband has a question too.
I do.
So I know, but mine's more important.
No, it isn't.
So you talked about going into areas, you know, like these warehouses that are no longer functioning and using those areas. Is there employment that goes hand in hand with that? Are you training people who used to work in these, you know, factories and whatever? Are we training a new group of people to work this way?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that we are very excited about from a Bowery perspective is we can employ anyone to work at Bowery, meaning that you don't need any agricultural experience to come in and start learning the job and the function at Bowery. There's great opportunity for career development and to build and grow as individuals at Bowery. So we think that we are creating these 365 days a year green jobs and recruiting from the communities in which we operate in, right? That is building the Bowery brand with us.
You know, I was upset with Nikki for jumping in with her question, but it's the perfect segue to mine. And that is, you know, one of the problems, take West Virginia. Everybody wants coal to go away except the West Virginians because that's what they know and that's how they, you know, to a lesser degree these days, how they stay alive. Have you thought about, you know, dropping one of your you know, picking up a warehouse in West Virginia, because it's job training and it's health and it's all that. God knows what they're eating in the public schools there, you know. So
absolutely. I mean, I think, David, that is very complementary to our approach of where we're opening up farms. So if you look ahead in early 2022, we are opening our next commercial farm in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, in the Lehigh Valley, right? Sure. This is a region that has historically relied on manufacturing, and it's transitioning into a distribution hub, a tech hub. It's another example where we took a brownfield site and have converted it and will convert it into a productive farm. So we are definitely looking at geographical locations.
Well, we're familiar with Scranton, too, which is old coal country, and they could use you there.
So, Katie, listen, I mean, obviously this interview could go on for a really long time. It's fascinating. Please tell everybody where they can find Bowery so they can find out more information, where they can find you online, please.
Absolutely. So you can find us in a variety of retailers, from Whole Foods to Safeway, Acme to Weiss to Giant. Mm-hmm. We have an e-commerce presence as well through Amazon Fresh.
Okay.
And I would be remiss if I didn't call out a local partner we're working with, DC Central Kitchen.
Yay.
And they are actually offering Bowery product in their Healthy Corners program. So in corner stores in those communities.
We do a lot of work with them.
That
They're
need
amazing.
More access to fresh food and produce.
Excellent. Katie, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's very exciting. We hope that you'll come back.
Yeah, we're going to have you back to talk about the operating system, because that's got to be unbelievable.
Okay. So thank you
so
much.
We love the opportunity. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks.
You too.
All right, Matthew, come back up.
She's something.
Chef Matt at Brasserie Liberté. So, you know, you have this great cocktail program. You're participating in restaurant weeks, DC Cocktail Week, that starts after Thanksgiving. Let's talk a little bit as we go into the season about what your menu looks like. How often does it change? What's happening, et cetera?
So we do have a few season offerings, but very intentionally, we keep most of our menu the same year round.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are a Brasserie Bistro concept, we want someone that comes today, tomorrow, a week, a month, a year from now to be able to enjoy that same dish that they did before.
Mm-hmm.
So while we do definitely offer seasonal offerings, majority of our menu stays the same. And like I said, that's very intentional.
Okay.
You know, we believe in consistency and execution and the quality of the food and doing that at a very high level.
Okay. Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. And that probably really helps keep it really consistent. It keeps the level really good. Is there anything that you want to share that's going to be happening, like sort of for Thanksgiving or during the holidays at the restaurant?
Yeah, so we're going to offer a traditional Thanksgiving meal, you know, mm-hmm. along with part of our menu. We do a prefix and offer, you know, all the good things you want: turkey, gravy, mm-hmm. mashed potatoes, Roosevelt, stuffing, all that stuff. Then as we get into the holidays, Christmas is my favorite time of year, and I love decorating. So it's going to be a Christmas wonderland inside the restaurant.
Okay.
I'll do all the decorating myself. I love it.
Okay. All right. Well, then we'll look forward to that. Okay, great.
All right. And now we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, mm-hmm. and that is beer.
Okay.
God bless beer. In the studio with us is Greg Reynolds. He's a taproom manager at Beltway Brewing. And on the line with us is Sten. That's Sten with a T, or Sven with a T.
No, it's just Sten.
No, he spells it Sven with a T, right,
okay.
Sten?
It's just Sten.
It's
just
Sten.
You can think of it your way if you want.
All right.
He's being a jerk, Sten.
No, I'm not. That's what Greg told me.
I know. Oh, yeah, sure. Throw Greg under the bus.
Thank you for throwing
there
me.
There we go. There we go. Well, you won't be taproom manager very long. But it's Beltway
we'll
Brewing.
Later, Greg.
It's Beltway Brewing. And basically, these two guys were originally home brewers. They did not know each other at that point, and they've created a terrific brew. Sten, why don't you tell us about kind of the genesis of this whole business?
Sure. Yeah. Beltway opened in 2013. My original idea was to start my own beer brand back then, and to do that by bringing my recipe to a local producer, a local brewery, to scale it up for me. And when I couldn't find anyone to help me with that because of the boom going on in 2011-2012, I decided to change the model to actually create a brewery that was a host for contract brewing, a host for producing beers for other startup and growing brands.
Well, that's really interesting, because that's one of the things I was going to ask. Like, given the time frame where you started this process, there is an explosion of local breweries, local distilleries here in DC. So how did you find your place in the market?
It was actually pretty easy at that point. So the same people I was calling to say, hey, could you make beer for me if I give you a recipe because I want to start a brand? I just called those people back and said, hey, I'm actually going to build a brewery. That's a host to help people.
Right, he's an incubator, which is great.
And they all said, great, I've got leads for you. Or great, you can help us scale up because we're full.
Or great, you can get these people to stop calling me.
Right? So that's exactly right.
Yeah.
So now... Tell us about the brewery. What is it like there? Is it a place that people can go to? How do you produce all these beers? How does it come to fruition?
Yeah. First of all, we're a 30 barrel brew house with 7 fermenters in our Sterling brewery. It's a production facility. We're about the size of a Port City or Lost Rhino, some local breweries, DC Brow. We also have a tap room up front where people can come in and enjoy beers that are freshly made on draft right there.
Okay, well, that's a perfect segue to Greg.
Yeah, so Greg Reynolds manages the tap room, and he's become one of my favorite people by opening
because I'm pouring
this
beer.
Is pouring the brewskis.
Pouring beer.
So what are we drinking here?
Well, one of the neat things about our tap room, just to follow up on Sten's point, is because we do contract brewing, we always can offer a variety that includes samples from some of our contract clients.
That's what I was going to ask.
So today in the tap room, there are 19 beers on tap.
Okay.
14 of those beers are Beltway beers. The other 5 beers are our clients. Huh. So our terms of business with our clients basically says, after we make you a beer, we get to keep a couple kegs.
Of course.
So we can let our local customers get a chance to sample a beer from New Jersey without driving to New Jersey, a beer from Charlottesville without driving to Charlottesville.
Well, we have to take a break. I think it's like marketing dollars for them, right? It gets them in front of a new
exactly.
market.
It gets them in front of a bigger audience, and it allows us within the tap room to give our local customers more variety, more opportunity to sample new beers.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the beers that you're actually producing for yourselves, as well as these other beers. This is David and Nikki Nellis. It's a boozy Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
It's the best kind. All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and I do want to tell you that your curly blonde hair today looks better than Robert Plant's ever did.
Oh,
I'm just letting you know.
I think that's a thank you.
And he was.
Who's Robert Plant?
Get out of here. Whippersnapper. Anyway, Robert Plant is one of the guys that works growing plants vertically.
Oh, right.
That's who it is.
Oh, my God. This beer is like a piece of meat.
Is it? Let me tell you. Is it Guinness-y? Well, here's my question for you, Greg.
Sure.
And that is sourcing. In other words, somebody gives you their recipe for their beer. Do they say, and I want the hops to come from Bob Smith's farm in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah,
how
exacting is the creation of beer for other people?
Stan, you want to take that one? That's probably better for you.
Yeah, sure. It's pretty exacting. Most of the time, they are handing us a recipe that they've either brewed before or that they want it done to spec. And that's really what we're proud of, is that we can carry that out. We can execute that recipe as good or better than they are expecting.
Do you assist them in getting the product, or do they get the product? How couture is it?
We do both. You know, sometimes or most of the time we'll source the ingredients that they specify. But sometimes they do have resources for special hops, special fruits or additives or adjuncts that they want to put in the beer. And they can drop ship those to us and we will include it.
Yeah, you know, we got to get Bowery Farming to dedicate a special warehouse to growing your hops.
Yes, that's a good idea. So talk about what you poured for us.
Okay, so this is an Imperial Stout. We do an Imperial Stout release every year right about this time of year. The name of the stout is Black Snake, and we generally release it on Black Friday. Interesting timing.
Right.
What you've got here is actually a sample that I drew from the fermentation tank yesterday. So it's not even a finished product. We're giving you kind of a sneak preview.
Mm-hmm.
Although we brew this beer every year, each year we change the wood conditioning that we do with the beer. So some years it's barrel aged, some years it's wood infused, and so on. So this year, sugar maple and cypress woods are soaking in this beer to add and enhance the flavor profile. So
interesting.
Hopefully you're going to pick up notes of maple syrup and vanilla cake, et cetera.
It's about the consistency of maple syrup.
It's good. I mean, but not in a negative way.
It's a strong beer. It's about 10.5% ABV.
It's Guinness-y.
It's an imperial
it's kind
stout.
Of the same.
Yeah, but I know, don't say Guinness.
Well, I'm saying Guinness. Guinness.
It looks like Guinness because of the color.
Guinness right. dark.
But it doesn't have it's, the texture or taste right. of the Guinness.
Because Guinness is
actually Nikki, you get 5 stars for calling that out. Good
Absolutely.
Job.
Well, because I think there's a misnomer.
She's not a beer drinker.
Just to be fair, I'm not a big beer drinker, but we've had a lot of beer people on the show over the years. And Guinness has actually been in studio multiple times, and they do not like to be known as a heavy beer.
They're not a heavy beer.
Exactly.
It's a very light body
it's
beer.
It's a very light beer, but it's a misconception because of the color.
Well, it's also that because it's generally served on nitro, and the foaminess creates
the top,
a perception
right.
to the customer that I'm drinking
that's
a heavy
why they
body
do it,
beer.
But that's really,
in reality, they're not.
Right. It has the same, and I wasn't allowed to finish because my wife is, you know, I'm just the beast.
I understand.
But the thing is, when you're drinking Guinness, it looks like you're drinking a glass of whipped meat, but it's very light.
Yes, if you let all that settle out and hold it up to the light,
right.
you'll realize
exactly.
how light-bodied it is.
Thank you.
So as you guys curate at the tap room, how do you go about doing that? Like, how many beers are you – right now you have 14 beers that are yours.
Right. So we have – 7 beers that are, if I would call them, core Beltway products that
okay.
are available
and then seasonal.
Year-round, mm-hmm. and those 7 beers are packaged and distributed. You're going to find them in all your local grocery and retail locations, et cetera.
That's
those
amazing.
7 beers are year-round.
Mm-hmm.
But we complement that with seasonal releases, Black Snake being one, the one mm-hmm. I'm going to show you in a few minutes or let you taste in a couple
well,
minutes.
Well, you better pour it now because you got like a minute left.
Okay.
Are you guys in Dawson's Market? Do you know?
Not that I know of.
Okay,
So we complement that with seasonal releases and also with what we call limited releases, meaning things we make that you can only get in the tap room. You
mm-hmm.
can't get them at your retailer because we make them in small batches and you have to come on site.
While
get
you're
them.
Pouring okay. that, is there a minimum a batch for if I come to you and say I want to produce this
like
beer.
That looks like fruit punch.
So
such an unsophisticated beer drinker's
I know.
Response.
Yes. So there are. So if you're doing a contract beer, then I think generally speaking we're looking for 30 barrel type batches. But the other thing that we do, which is kind of neat going into the holiday season, is we do something called private labeling,
mm-hmm.
meaning if somebody wants to have a packaged beer, a canned beer with their own personal label on it,
mm-hmm.
we can do that in 10 case increments.
Cool.
Really?
So you come in and
great gift for the holidays.
Yeah.
What does that cost?
How'd you like to have a unique? How'd you like to have your own unique Christmas present?
That it's a great gift for the holidays.
What does it cost, and what's the timeline on it?
Hurry.
You could do 10 cases of our blonde ale for $500 with
bad.
A custom label on it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
All right.
And wait. And how much in advance do you have to order?
Now. Order now.
Yeah. Your labeling is going to be the tricky
Operators
part.
Operators are
so,
online.
Yeah, order now. Order now. To
you
get
just,
label
you just gave me my holiday.
BeltwayBrewCo.com.
My company's holiday gift.
I'm just going
to
tell everybody there is a beer pong event on Wednesday, November 17th. You guys do events out there, and you should go check out the beers. Just please give us your website and Instagram.
BeltwayBrewCo.
Uh-huh.
.com on that's the handle on Instagram and beltwaybrewco.com/events will take you to the calendar.
Come back to the mic. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Come back, Shane.
Tell us quickly because I want to know more about your brunches because I know you're launching some amazing things. Let's hear it.
Yeah. So we're alternating every other Sunday. We do one that is a disco funk brunch
mm-hmm.
with DJ Phil Reese.
Mm-hmm.
He spins 70s and 80s disco and funk.
Do you mean me to come and do some karaoke?
Yes. I will give you a microphone and
do
we will
I have to
make
do
it
drag
live.
Drag queen karaoke? Can I do
well,
regular?
Well, there
me?
Is a drag queen
I
that
know,
day.
I know there is.
Tara Hope.
I know there is.
She's there.
I just want to do regular
I'm
karaoke.
She's there.
I'm
annoyed
that like everybody sort of co-opted the drag queen. I mean, I'm happy for the drag queens because
yeah.
they're making cash,
yeah,
which
yeah,
is
yeah,
great.
Yeah. She's making
but
money.
But it has got a little bit co-opted.
Yeah, so Tara kind of comes in and does hosting.
Mm-hmm.
Last Sunday was the first time we did it, and everyone wanted a number, and she was like, no, I couldn't.
I mean, no,
I couldn't.
No, no,
so
no.
we twisted her arm, and she did a couple. So she'll probably do that a little bit more. And then tomorrow, we have our first gospel brunch.
Wow.
You know, I'm the son of a preacher, so a gay son of a preacher. So, you know, I wanted to get all of me in there. I got a little disco, funk,
you are a
drag queens,
of
and Jesus.
Oh, you are. I love that. Okay, great. And just lastly, so for Cocktail Week. I just want to, if both of you will come up to the mic for just a sec. You know, participating in the Restaurant Association of Metropolitan Washington, you know, as restaurateurs or chefs or people in the industry, you know what they are. But a lot of lay people, you know, people just love the restaurants. Is there a real benefit to you for participating in the Restaurant Association's concepts?
Absolutely. I think all of them all year round are very beneficial. I mean, not even just for marketing purposes, but to, you know, it reaches more people. And the more people that we can get into any of our restaurants, the better it is for all of us.
Excellent. Shane?
Yeah, I agree with Chef. You know, the thing is, it's like, especially in today's climate, any opportunity, one, for people to have some fun, mm-hmm. Two, to promote our own restaurants, and three, for me in general, I want to promote the local scene and the local distilleries that are here in our city.
Okay, great. Give me Crazy Ann Helens on Instagram.
At Crazy Ann Helens.
Excellent. And La Brasserie?
At Liberté DC.
Excellent. All right. We want to thank all of our guests for joining us in studio today. Such an amazing show. Such delicious things. You've learned a lot. Of course, you can find this all on the list. Areyouonit.com. You're going to follow me at NYCCINELLIS. On Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Don't forget Industry Night on Real Fun DC every Tuesdays at 7 p.m. We launch a new show. And this is our last show before Thanksgiving. So gobble, gobble
praise
to all
Lord.
Of you out there. Be safe. Be healthy.
I just have one
Shush.
Question
no,
before
no.
you finish. Is your hand on my shoulder so I won't talk?
Yes.
That's all
and everybody, be careful out there. Get your booster, please. And have a safe and happy Thanksgiving with you and your family this year. Oh, and have lots of deliciousness.
A delicious week.